Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, a beautiful afternoon for a good game of football now, and it looks as though we have the makings of it.
Barnes has come in. Oh, a fine goal by John Barnes. That's a beauty.
Hello and welcome to the Watford Buzz podcast. My name is Matt Messiano and today we're going to discuss the narrow 3-2 defeat to Southampton in the fourth time of meeting them this season, although this time under Tom Cleverley. Another Tom goes by the name of Bodell and he is here this afternoon joining me. No Jordan Weimer though today, so Tom, the analytics is falling firmly on yourself.
No pressure then to live up to the job that Jordan normally does. I'll do my best, but a bit like Jeremy Ngakia coming in for Ryan Andrews, the standard is bound to drop off a little.
Didn't get off to the best of starts, really, did we, Tom? It was 2-0 down before we could really blink, and it looked like it could be a difficult day for Watford.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I tweeted it from the Buzz account at the time. Bloody hell, we like an early goal against Southampton, don't we? Because it was the Shane Long 6 or 7 second goal that he scored against us a few years back, wasn't it? And I barely had time to, full disclosure, settle down at the Wealdstone game where I was when the goal went in and I got the buzz on my phone. I thought, here we go, long afternoon coming. And I think, you know, both goals as well, the Che Adams goal, they were both very kind of soft goals to concede, weren't they? And having kind of talked about the positives of the Cleverley era so far defensively and that we've become a bit more defensively resolute, you know, that all kind of went out the window a little bit inside 20 minutes, basically.
Yeah, it did, didn't it? However, it wasn't one of those games that was going to end up with a absolute pummeling. Watford did show a bit of nerve, a bit of steel, and they came back in the second half looking a bit more rejuvenated. In the end, Tom, it was really a disappointment that we didn't go away with anything.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it kind of 2-2 with 5 minutes to go, you thought, great, we've probably killed their any momentum, any kind of positivity, optimism in the ground, and obviously got level and worked fairly hard to do so without seeing kind of too much of the ball. You know, they had a hell of a lot of it felt like a hell of a lot of possession compared to us, 63% of the ball to 37% of the ball. Yet I didn't feel they created a lot of chances for it, whereas I actually felt when we got into their kind of final third, we looked a little bit more dangerous. I think we're quite, you know, fortuitous in a sense, perhaps, in that Ryan Porteous scores an absolute boomer from the edge of the box, and although Kone's goal ends up being a relatively simple but not the hardest finish in the world, it's the kind of build up to that, the way he picks the ball up and wriggles free of any attention that kind of makes that a pretty remarkable goal as well. But I think that was the big positive in all of it, wasn't it? The character that was shown to get back to 2-2. I think there's, and obviously we're going to get into this because it's a big part of it, but kind of element of fortune over the winner, perhaps double element of fortune over the winner. But the character to get back to 2-2 and the adjustments made and so on, I think speak for, you know, good kind of work from Cleverley and the coaching staff. But ultimately, I'm sure they will all be. And we saw Jimmy Gilligan at the end going over and making his feelings clear to the officials, making his feelings known to the officials. I think they will all be pretty put out that that was how their unbeaten run as a coaching staff ended.
Mm. Yeah, he was pretty unhappy. Best way to describe that one. As we all were, to be honest. Ahead of the game, there was a bit of a change of shape. Was that necessitated by Andrew's form or fitness, or was it just a tactical decision? What did you make of that one, Tom?
Yeah, I think Cleverley obviously said that Andrew's had a knock or wasn't fully fit, but I think there's maybe a little bit of a kind of doing him a favour as much as anything, because he's had a rough few weeks, I think, hasn't he, one way or another. I think the transition from under-18s football, you know, under-21s football to playing week in, week out in the Championship and playing a lot of games is, you know, the good thing is he's been exposed to a lot of football. It's not an immediate thing, and we've discussed it, I think, before with Jordan, but it does take a little bit of work, and it is kind of physically draining, and, you know, the recovery time and everything is, and getting ready for the next game as much as it is just the minutes they've put into him. So I think it probably wasn't the worst thing to take him out. It within itself necessitated a change, because there's nobody with Ngakia injured still. There's nobody that could really come in and play that right wing back role. It was good. I was pleased to see that we didn't throw kind of the baby out with the bathwater completely, insofar as put Deli Bashir in at right back, because I think he has been doing, and the irony is he obviously struggled and was hooked at half time, but he's up until Southampton played very well in midfield under Tom, hadn't he? So I think it was nice to see that he stuck with that, and he wasn't kind of, you know, oh, well, you're good enough for centre midfield until we need a backup right back kind of attitude. Porteous in there, kind of hit and miss. But yeah, I think it was a little bit of all those kind of factors, really. Form, fitness, and kind of probably a little bit of a tactical switch as well. We saw a lot of, I think, or it certainly felt like to me watching the game back on Y-Scout, it certainly felt like a lot of Hull's attacks were directed down Porteous's side. It certainly felt like he had a tougher afternoon than Jamal Lewis did in a defensive sense, at least. So I think, you know, they probably targeted him, and understandably so. I don't think he did too badly, Porteous. It's kind of made out that he had a disaster of a game. I'm not sure if I necessarily agree with that, but obviously I have to caveat it with, and it is a big caveat, so I accept I'm contradicting myself here. I think you also have to caveat it a little bit with the fact both goals, the first two goals, I should say, both the open play goals came down his side, and I don't think he covered himself in glory on either of those, to be honest, personally either. So don't know if it's an experiment that we'll see repeated anytime soon, but I think it just serves to underline a point that we all know inside out, right back is a position of weakness at the end of the day.
Well, yeah, in some ways. I don't know if it will be next season with the same personnel that we have.
This is the debate, isn't it? You know, there's going off kind of track a little bit here, but obviously there's been a lot made of there was a lot made at the time that it happened of the Jeremy Ngakia extension reported in The Athletic by Adam Leventhal. Club have obviously not reported that, and it's kind of reared its head in the last week because of the list of contracts, it's kind of deals done by all the clubs that involved intermediaries was released, and Lou Orne tacked it to him, dug out on the kind of 38, and I've got it in front of me now, but the kind of 38 pages of transactions that one of the deals that we've done over the last 12 months that involved an intermediary was between us and, I was about to say William Troost-Aconne because his name's there as well, but Jeremy Ngakia, and the language that it uses, it says updated contract. So we don't know any more than that, but we, you know, can reasonably assume that means a contract extension of some sort. And I made the kind of case last week, I think it was, on Twitter, that if he's fit and well, Ngakia, he's probably a fairly cheap, serviceable backup to Ryan Andrews, who we'd all want to be the first choice. But at the same time, Ryan Andrews is going to have dips in form. He is going to suffer little injuries, niggles, could get suspensions, etc. You want someone who is going to be available. And that is the long and the short of it. Availability, as I always say, is the best ability. And you cannot, after 4 years of Ngakia being here, say that he is available often enough. So, yeah, it concerns me slightly. The theory works. The reality, with everything that we know, perhaps doesn't.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. And we'll get back onto that a bit later in the show. Let's move on to someone you mentioned already then, Tom Delibashiru. We expect him to be another good progression for him, really. He's been really building every week and seemingly improving, but just didn't have a good game. And it was pleasing to see that Cleverley recognised that and took him off at half time. But what was it in particular that he wasn't doing that that meant that he needed to go off, Tom?
Yeah, funny. I think to be honest with you, it was one where he was involved in the goals, wasn't he? Insofar as the second goal, it's him who's kind of there at the near post who slices the clearance horribly and, you know, gets unlucky in a sense that it falls to David Brooks and he finds Che Adams. But that obviously counts against him. And there were just a number of occasions where he just lost the ball in dangerous areas, which isn't really something I would associate with him, to be honest. You know, just caught kind of dawdling on the edge of the box, I can remember on one occasion, or kind of giving it away and leading to dangerous moments. And he has been really, really good. One of those chances was kind of fell to Will Smallbone, who kind of thrashed it over on the edge. And then not very long after that, it's the clearance for the second goal that obviously is on him. So I just think, yeah, one of those games where you wouldn't almost say, oh, this one thing was really bad. He just wasn't really at the races, was he, all afternoon in the kind of 45 minutes he was on the field. And actually, I pulled up his stats in anticipation of going over his performance. It's not like and this is why obviously you need the eye test alongside these things. It's not like he performed terribly in any kind of one metric. 15 of 18 passes completed. Didn't pass forward very often, but we didn't as a team, to be quite honest, in the first 45 minutes. 5 of 7 defensive actions were successful. 3 of 5 defensive duels were won. But I think the devil is in the detail of what he didn't do. And as I say, is giving the ball away in dangerous places. Those defensive duels that he lost, those passes he misplaced, put us under pressure and you know, turn Southampton kind of on us. So I think that was the thing. And to be honest with you, I kind of applaud Tom Cleverley for taking decisive action at that point. I don't think it's about sending a message or anything like that, but it's about saying, well, we've got another competent player in Ismail Kone who's had a great season and maybe tailed off in the last few weeks. There's nothing to be lost by making the change and being proactive at that point. And it obviously paid off insofar as Kone goes and scores a lovely goal to equalise.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was a very good, nice goal, wasn't it? It seemed low, and I think he's done this before. He has this ability to hit the ball before you think he's going to, which really throws the keeper off, I think, because they end up diving a little bit late, and he can also find the corner quite well as well, can't he? So he sort of passed it into the goal, didn't he?
That's it. That's what, you know, he made it look like a really easy finish in the end, didn't he? Because it was, you know, he opened his body up and just really sort of slotted it. But it was just really, really well placed. I must admit, I'm struggling to remember his other goals for us this season. Home to Norwich, away to Preston, away to Plymouth. I can't really remember.
A lot of them have been long-range smashes, haven't they? But he has scored goals like that before, I think.
Yeah, no, I'll take your word for it. But, you know, it's an element. I think the thing that's worth saying at this point is all those kind of central midfield players, him, Chatfatadze, Tom Delibashiru, I'll throw Yasser Asprilla into the mix here as well. You know, he's been playing sort of number 10 in recent weeks a little bit more. They all need to start chipping in with more goals next season, generally, for their own development and, you know, opportunities to move away from Watford and progress in their careers as they're all fairly young. But also because, you know, look at the kind of squad next season. Are we going to be able to go out and sign the 15, 20 goal striker that we want? Possibly, probably not. So, you know, it's again, it's going to be a case of getting, you know, spreading the load essentially. And Kone is definitely someone who's got the ability to get among the goals more regularly.
Mm. Well, Yasser Asprilla in particular as well. I mean, I think that's the one component that is missing from the game, is that he needs more goals. And if he does that consistently, I think it will change him from being what is probably a £10 million player to maybe maybe a 15, £20 million player.
Yeah, yeah. No, totally agree. Totally. It's end product with him, period, isn't it? And assists, it's always tricky with assists because you can lay the ball on a plate for someone and they can do a Ronnie Rosenthal and smash it over the bar faced without a goalkeeper, can't they? So you can't necessarily put too much stock in assist numbers on their own, but, you know, goals and expected assists and what have you do kind of, those should be his kind of calling cards. So I think you're absolutely right. If he kind of gets over the hump in that respect, you're talking about a player who's worth a lot of money.
Although, to be fair, the club might decide just to cut and run whilst they know that he is an asset, because they have books to balance at the end of this season. And I can't really think of anyone else really who's going to bring in a lot of money at this time. And the club still need to make the money, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's going to depend on what happens, isn't it? You know, if someone comes in early and says, right, there's X million, then I think you know, he goes. Because the other thing with all of this is the accountancy period. Any deal, we want to get it done before June 30th so that we can book that profit or book that transfer fee in this accounting year. So it's going to be very interesting. And that is obviously why the João Pedro deal was tied up so early last season, so that the money could go into that year's accounts rather than waiting for next year. So, yeah, we shall see. But I think you're right. There aren't that many other players that you look at and go, we're going to get significant money here. Andrews, maybe if he'd had a year where he'd been kind of at his best level throughout, Kone probably the same, but they've probably just both had enough of a little dip that they might go under the radar, which is obviously not a bad thing for us in terms of retaining them and getting another year out of them. But those are probably two of the most saleable assets. Imran Luza, perhaps. I'm not sure how he's been getting on in...
Oh, yes. The forgotten man.
That's it. He is, rather, isn't he? But do you see him coming back? You never know. Stranger things have happened. I thought we'd never see Vakumbayo again when he went back on loan in Belgium last season, and here he is, our main striker. So, yeah, it's. I think it's going to be another busy summer, personally. I know we've kind of veered off track here, but I think it's worth kind of saying, I think there's going to be quite a bit of turnover again in terms of getting out some of the players that are still, you know, if there's anyone still now on a bit of a legacy contract that isn't living up to their value and you know, or players that have just kind of hung around for a while without contributing anything. I think we're going to see a few move on. And if we do, we're already pretty thin on the ground in terms of numbers. We're going to have to bring some people in, even if they are all kind of free agents.
Yeah, yeah. We'll probably do a bigger show on that particular topic. That sounds like a summer one to me, or maybe in a few weeks' time. But it is interesting,
yes,
to see what's going to happen going forward, because like you say there, Tom, not a lot of sellable assets and probably quite a few movements in the summer. We'll put a pin in that one and come back to that at a later date. Let's get back to the game then. Look, at half time, we thought that the game was over, I think. If we're being honest, I certainly did.
I think we were a lot better in the second half. I think the thing for me, obviously, made the change in midfield, but I think the biggest thing for me was that we pressed a bit higher. In the first half, we seemed very, very passive in our press. You know, there wasn't any kind of pressure on Southampton. Obviously, you don't expect them to kind of hare around all over the pitch. There's a time and there's a place and a way of doing it. But I just felt like we put them under a little bit more pressure and actually found that when we did that, we knocked them out of their rhythm a little bit. You know, Gavin Bazunu never looked quite comfortable with the ball at his feet when they went back to him, and it kind of meant that they hurried their clearances and were just kind of hacking it away upfield. Whereas in the first half, we gave them a lot of time in their own kind of third and up to the halfway line to do what they wanted in essence and kind of pick their passes and whatnot. And I said, you know, they went down the left-hand side a lot, their left-hand side a lot. And I checked that out. 44% of their attacks went down that side versus, I think, 33 or 22% down the right-hand side. Can't remember the balance now. Should have jotted that down. But it certainly, you know, it certainly felt like we set out with a lot more intent to kind of deny them space, squeeze them and force them into mistakes. And to be honest with you, Southampton, I certainly didn't feel like they had they're much in the way of chances in the second half, personally. I thought they were fairly limited. I'm just looking at my notes now. There's one where Adam Armstrong got inside and cut it back to David Brooks. Obviously they got the winner, which, you know, negates the point. At the end of the day, they got their goal, and that's the main thing. But I, you know, from my notes that I scribbled down, I can't really see any great opportunities they had. So yeah, I think we were a lot better in the second half. Still don't think we created masses ourselves. You know, overall the difference in XG wasn't that much between either team. I think from memory when I looked at it. So, you know, I think it was a fairly close game. And I certainly didn't watch it and think, oh, wow, Southampton, they are a really good team. You can see why they're kind of up there. You can see why they're in contention. And ultimately, we'd looked through it is with a very different lens, I think, had they not gone and got what was ultimately. And there's no sour grapes because it is just football and we've had it. And we've obviously had it against them, the infamous Abdoulaye Doucouré handball goal. But that is just football, unfortunately, sometimes. You know, coulda, woulda, shoulda, we didn't. And they've won. And I do believe, broadly, these things even themselves out over the course of the season.
Yeah, it was handball. It shouldn't have counted. It wouldn't have done had this been played in the Premier League. A fixture that not long ago was played in the Premier League, actually. But, VAR would have stepped in there and said, yep, doesn't count. Not only that, though, Tom, but the goal came after the added 7 minutes. The goal came in the ninth minute of time. Why was the game still going?
It's
almost like the referee was waiting until they had scored the goal before he decided to finish.
I don't have an awful big problem with that. And see, this, you know, it's minimum of, I wasn't sitting there with my stopwatch counting down the kind of, you know, stoppages, delays, etc. during extra time. It's minimum of, don't be wrong. I think if I was a player, if I was in the game, I'd be pissed off. And I suspect if I was in the ground, I would have been pissed off as well. But I didn't take kind of as much umbrage at that as I did the way the goal goes in and it being an obvious handball. You know, that's the point. That's the one to get kind of wound up about, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it compounds the fact that, you know, it shouldn't have stood. And it kind of eliminates the memory of how good Watford were in the second half to get it back, and they deserved the point at the very least. I know it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't help us in any way. You know, we're fighting for 13th. That's not really a point that we need, but we deserved it, and that's the point. We deserved it, and their goal was wrong. But anyway, never mind. We move on.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
In fact, we move on to Hull City, and we could have some extra players available to us for this one. Tom Cleverley said that the plan was for Ken Sema and Jeremy Ngakia to come into contention for this game. I mean, they probably won't be 100%, but it feels like they could be coming back at a useful time, given the fact that we know that Andrews seemingly needs a bit of a break, and Lewis is off at the end of the season anyway, so it could be a good time for Sema to come back in.
Yeah, I've never known Sema to be this injured, I must admit. I mean, kind of in and out of the, you know, availability as much as he has been this season. He's not really, he's not really been able to get going properly this season, has he? He obviously had his kind of period last season where he was kind of banging form under Bilic, wasn't it? And he got the two goals against West Brom, and he was kind of playing really well on the right and Saar on the left against kind of all popular consensus. But this year it has not, it's not really happened for him. I think it's fair to say. Only the one goal, 22 starts, and obviously a memorable goal away at Swansea. But yeah, he's been kind of in and out of the team really this, since the turn of the year. So I think he's someone that will probably, you know, you can say with a fair amount of confidence we'll be here next season, and we should be probably looking to make a fairly key part of this team. I like Ken Sema a lot. I know, I think, you know, he's not a Premier League player, but I think what he lacks in ability at times he makes up for in his work rate and so on. And if it is to be Cleverley, and if it is to be a kind of wing back system, then I wouldn't rule him out of being one of those options for us, you know, given our kind of lack of, our likely lack of resource to strengthen the squad. So he's an important one. And Jeremy Ngakia just needs to put a run together now, doesn't he? You know, it'd been good, it'd almost have been good if he'd been fit for the entire Cleverley regime to stick him in and say, right, you're definitely going to get kind of a run of 9 games here. Just really put together a proper spell, because he looked good in part. You know, start of the season, he had a couple of games where he played well. Last season, he had a couple of games I can remember him coming into the team kind of out of the blue and playing well. But it always kind of ends with, oh, he's got a niggle, you know, he's got a hamstring or a calf or an ankle or something, and suddenly he's not available for, it always seems to just be longer than you'd ever imagine with him. So personally on Ngakia, I'd have probably cut our losses with him, because I just think, you know, if you've got a small squad and lack of resources, you don't want to be ploughing money into someone you know you can't rely on. But flip side is, if he is the backup and he is cheap and he is counting as homegrown, then, you know, it's cheaper to do that than recruit somebody new. But yeah, I think both those guys just need, they could probably do with another month of the season almost, just to get into the swing of things before the summer, but they're obviously not going to get that.
yeah, they could. Ahead of the Southampton game, Cleverley was asked about playing some of the youngsters, and he said that he won't be giving out any charity debuts. Which made me a bit sad, because I was hopeful of seeing a few charity debuts, because, you know, there's not a lot else to play for this season, so I wanted to see some young guys. He did mention though that he thinks Jack Greaves probably deserves some game time, so he's one that I suspect we will see at some point before the end of the season, maybe against Hull. Who knows?
Yeah, I would like, I must admit, I would like to, not charity debuts, but players that, like Greaves, who have been, you know, knocking around the squad for essentially most of the season now. He's been an unused sub 9 times this season, a couple of times last season. I'm sure there are others who have been kind of, you know, I'm sure he or others have been kind of, about to say 19th man, but we've got 9 subs already these days, isn't it? So 21st man, you know, quite a few times yeah. this season. Albert Eames is another one, certainly, that springs to mind, who's been kind of around it. Aidan Coyne a few times as well. You know, some of these guys have actually probably been training with the first team more often than we realise and have been on the bus to games, have been at the ground on match days, 21st man, as I say. I think, you know, it'd be nice to see some of those. We've quite often done this in my memory of Watford, haven't we, in the, kind of the end of the season. I can remember Dominic Blizzard coming in at the end of the 03-04 season.
Adrian Mariappa.
That's it, Adrian Mariappa. Who was the left back? Up at Preston, we had a left back.
Brandon Mason, was it?
Brandon Mason has played, but he wasn't the one I was thinking of. No, not a left back. Tommy Hoban obviously came in maybe a season or two before he made his debut. Came in up at Preston, I think, on the final day under Malky Mackay, possibly. We wore the AC Milan kit. I just really remember that kit. And, you know, before he really got his chance. I just think it's a good thing, and it just shows there's a pathway. And also, you never know how much we're going to have to rely on these people next, some of these guys next season. Not necessarily to start every game, but certainly to kind of pad the squad out. As I just said, you know, as much to my own surprise as anything, it's 9 subs these days. We've got a small squad. We may not have a particularly big base of senior pros again next season. So you're probably going to have to use people like this from time to time, people like those guys from time to time to time. So it's not a bad thing to just blood them and get them used to it in a no pressure, low pressure environment. So yeah, I'm kind of with you. I'd like to see some. Jack Greaves seems like the most likely one, doesn't he? I must admit, because he's been around so much and he's been around the team for a couple of seasons now. But I hope you know, a couple of them are given the opportunity to prove that they've got what it takes to be useful, I suppose, at the very least.
Yeah, he's one that might see more game time next season by the very fact that there might be players ahead of him currently who aren't here next season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's always a tendency with managers, and I'm not saying this of Tom Cleverley necessarily, because it's early days, but of managers to trust in someone experienced rather than kind of giving somebody young an unknown quantity a chance. So, I think it'd be good to see him get a bit of a look in, at least.
Moving on to any other business then, Tom, we briefly mentioned this earlier, but let's go back into it now. We had some reports come out recently with regards to agent spend in the Championship. Agent spend, actually, all over the leagues, in the Premier League, the Championship. I think it went down to National League as well, which was interesting.
Especially
some of the teams in there that are the sort of the sleeping giants, maybe not spending as much as you'd expect them to. But anyway, back to the Championship, and Watford were fourth for agent spend, 4.7 million. That in itself suggests something, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think there's a few caveats to point out here. So first and foremost, this covers the period February 23 till February 24. And it's not just kind of incomings and outgoings. It's any transaction that might involve an agent. So contract renewals, contract terminations, sales, loans, whatever. You know, if it involves a player in some guise, then it probably involved an agent. So yeah, 4.7 million when you consider that we've kind of spent about 1.5 million probably on transfer fees in that time, Rajovic and Tom Ince being the only kind of cash transactions in that period, kind of seems a bit out of kilter. But we've obviously done a lot of business in that time. You know, we obviously got rid of a lot of players last summer, and you know, on separate to the main document, there's that breakdown I mentioned. It's a hell of a long document, 38 pages. Of the deals that it includes. And for Watford, there's discarding players that we kind of had agents involved in were Gosling, Troostekong and Saar. So it just gives you, you know, a bit of a flavour of kind of the level of deals, you know, Gosling being paid off, Saar and Ekong transferred out. You know, it kind of gives you a bit of an idea. However, all that said, it's still a pretty poor return for your 4.7 million. If you say, okay, fine, I'll take it as the whole kind of squad build over that time to then finish, you know, probably 13th, 14th in the championship and whatever we finished last season, you know, it's pretty bloody miserable when you think that the only teams that spent more than us were Southampton, 7.5, Leicester just over 8, and Leeds just over 13. You know, so we're the fourth highest spenders behind those guys, and probably two of those three are going to get promoted this season. Potentially all three if one of them ends up going, you know, Southampton end up going up through the playoffs. So I think it just speaks for the kind of the carelessness of the spending, really, for me. There were 19 separate transactions involving Watford where a fee was paid to an intermediary. Only three of those, and this, you know, was obviously not everything, but three of those involved Mogi Bayat, which was Saar and Troostekong out and Emmanuel Dennis in. But I think it would be interesting to look at, and if I thought of this before now, I might have done it, look at, you know, how many points were won or the cost per point of that agent spend over the last year, over that kind of 12-month period, because I think, you know, a lot of teams would have come out of it a lot better than us. For example, somebody like Millwall or Plymouth, who, okay, they haven't done kind of better than us necessarily in terms of league finish, but in terms of cost per point for those that totals paid to agents and intermediaries, you know, it's cost them a lot less. Probably a better example might be someone like Preston, who spent just under 1.2 million and are going to finish probably just outside the playoffs. You know, Middlesbrough, 1.4 million, they're going to probably miss the playoffs, which is falling a little bit short of their goals, but relatively much more value for money, put it that way.
Mm. Yeah, that'd be interesting to know, Tom. Maybe we can come up with that in a future.
Yeah, maybe if I have a quiet evening tonight, I'll try and look at it in a bit more detail. But yeah, I think I just think, you know, just more grist to the mill for Watford supporters of how poorly our recruitment is run from top to bottom, really, that we can have the fourth highest spend on agents in the championship and still end up with a squad only kind of fit to finish mid-table. Obviously, the advantage, obviously, for Southampton, Leicester and Leeds is this is their first season in the championship. So, you know, they've not had the financial realities bite as hard as they have for us in our second season down here. I guess the truer test, will be, you know, how much do they spend? What business do they do next season if they're in this division, any of them? Probably, as I said, they won't all be in this division anyway to get that kind of relative kind of comparison. But yeah, it's just not a particularly good look for us, and definitely not when you know that we lean so heavily on one agent. You would think that there would be some kind of advantage to us either in the cost and the outlay or the quality of players that we're bringing in. And I'm not sure we're seeing it on either of those points.
Mm. Okay. Next up then, Hull City, Watford back at the Vic. Another opportunity for Tom Cleverley to pick up 3 points at home for the first time in 2024.
Rather running out of opportunities, aren't we? Yeah, Hull, not necessarily in bad form by any means, but have only won two of their last nine, quite a lot of draws in that. But the other way of looking at that is they've only lost two of the last kind of 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, two of the last 12. So just say drawing a lot of games, beat QPR at the weekend. Obviously QPR not great. Won at Cardiff, which is a better result. Got a draw against Middlesbrough, which is not a bad result. You know, probably kind of overperforming a little bit. Their XG only has them good enough for 12th. So, you know, probably getting a little bit, 57 that is, and they scored 62 goals. So perhaps getting a little bit fortunate in that respect. But I think, you know, got a lot of very tricksy, decent attacking players, as I think quite a lot has been made of that kind of forward line. As Zerari on loan from Burnley, obviously done very well in this division previously. Fabio Carvalho on loan from Liverpool. Billy Sharp's come in from LA Galaxy. Liam Delap on loan from Man City. Our good friend Ozan Toufan has had a decent season for them by the looks of it. Jadon Philogene, Jean-Michel Seri, obviously cost Fulham a lot of money a few years ago. You know, they got some really kind of decent players in their own. I say only, they're, you know, only 6 points outside. It's a bit late in the season's rip, but they're 6 points outside the playoffs at this point. They've got a game in hand on Norwich, who are in seventh. So they will, you know, they will be hammering hard, as all the teams we seem to be playing lately, for their kind of individual goals to get over the line. Mm. They're going to have something to play for. And as I said last week with the Southampton, it's a good competitive game. It's an opportunity. You know, it's not just going to be two teams that are on the beach. So we should kind of try and match their levels and see what we can learn from it and what we can take for it. As you mentioned, hopefully getting back Semeran and Gakia and get an opportunity to look at them. It'll be interesting to see what Cleverley does shape-wise. Does he go back to the three? They seem to play a back four more often than not, but certainly in Ryan Giles, they've got a fullback that gets high up the field, wing back, kind of, you know, more naturally attack minded player. That's done very well in this division before, obviously with Middlesbrough, got that move to Luton where it didn't really work out for him. So yeah, going to be a good test, and I'm sure they'll all be kind of focused on trying to end the season on a high and you know, ensure that we're not going into next season still searching for our first home win of 2024.
Mm. Meanwhile, at the top of the table, it's getting quite exciting, isn't it? Ipswich, Leicester, Leeds, maybe now Southampton, possibly, probably a bit too much for them to do, but...
Well, it's the great, you know, it's the fact they've got a couple of games in hand, isn't it? It's the great bloody, you know, nobody wants it this year, isn't it? Incredible, really, from where we were with Leicester seemingly running away with it, and their fans being very kind of about the style of play under Enzo Maresca, and now they're, you know, they're scrabbling to hold on to second. It's going to go right to the wire, one expects, and will be quite interesting for the neutral.
Yeah, absolutely. Who do you want to get it, or who do you think will get it?
I would love Ipswich to get it. Definitely, I would love Ipswich to get it. I just think, you know, the story and the what they've done there in kind of building their way back gradually, almost from kind of ground zero for Ipswich going into League One, it would be great. You know, they score a hell of a lot of goals. They're entertaining, and it always leaves me a little bit cold when you see these teams kind of come down and with the squads that they're able to hold on to and the money, the financial advantage they've got, always leaves me a bit cold to see them go straight back up. So it'd be nice if somebody new was kind of in that mix, especially when the other teams in the playoffs are all kind of fairly well established, top end of the Championship, yo-yo between the Championship and the Premier League teams in West Brom and Norwich. So yeah, Ipswich would be the ones I would like. I don't know their fixtures, who's got the kind of kindest run in, but yeah, it's going to be probably one that goes to the final day. Imagine, and they'll do one of those highlight shows where they kind of flip between the different games as the goals go in and the circumstances change over the course of 90 minutes.
Yeah, I do always enjoy those. At the bottom of the table, Sheffield Wednesday have got themselves into a position where they might be able to escape. Tom, it's pretty tight down there. Rotherham already gone, as we know. And then it's Sheffield Wednesday on 44, Huddersfield on 44, Birmingham 45, just outside of the relegation zone. Stoke City and Queen's Park Rangers on 47 each. Plymouth on 48. Blackburn, you think, will be fine on 49, probably. So it's going to be between those ones, I suppose.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I kind of hope Birmingham City go down. They kind of deserve it for being such a bloody ridiculous club, the way they've acted this season. Stoke almost is, to be honest with you, you could pour scorn on most of those teams. Sheffield Wednesday have been a shambles from start to finish and have only kind of got themselves in a situation where they can get out of it because they finally had the sense to appoint a proper manager in Danny Rule. Huddersfield had been a bit of a mess. Probably wouldn't have been there if they'd held on to Warnock and not got the Darren Moore appointment wrong. Stoke have been a mess ever since they got into the Championship. QPR, never not funny to see them struggle. So if any of those teams went down, I'd be fairly okay with it. Yeah, nonplussed, that's it. Blackburn have got a couple of important results in quick succession, haven't they, to probably just about do enough, only because there are so many teams beneath them at this stage. But pleased to see John Eustace kind of surviving there by the skin of their teeth. But yeah, if I had to pick one, I'd probably quite like Birmingham City to go down.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Well, thanks very much for joining me today, Tom. We'll be back with Jordan, hopefully, next week, when Jordan will be in town to watch a live game for the first time in probably a few seasons now, I'd imagine. So that'll be exciting for himself. I'll be getting along to that one as well. Tom, are you at a non-league game this Saturday, or you're out and about somewhere?
No, this Saturday I'm in Norfolk for my brother's wedding, so I'm planning to go to the Sunderland game and meet you guys so we can meet in person, the three of us. You and I have met plenty of times, but meet in person, the three of us, for the first time ever, which will be exciting.
That will be exciting. That will be exciting. Still things to look forward to this season.
That's it.
Do join us for the Hull City review show, which will probably come out right about this time next week. Hopefully talking about a marvellous 3 points and scuppering Hull City's attempts to get into the playoffs, which would probably see us wrap the playoffs up, I imagine. Maybe not, actually. They might have one more bite of the cherry possible. Me trying to do quick maths in my head. Yeah, they might be able to escape even if they do lose to us, but they would have to rely on Norwich to pretty much lose everything remaining to them. All right then. Well, thanks very much, guys. We'll be back in a week's time. Until then, we've been the Watford Buzz, and from myself and Tom, it's goodbye for now.
Goodbye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.